Welcome, and thanks for listening to Intrinsic Investigations. My name is Mr. Olivo, and I created this podcast because I've been fortunate enough over the last decade to see unique and thought-provoking projects happen in my classroom, and we wanted a place to showcase them. The true heart of this podcast lies not in the content discovered, but in exploring the personal stories of these young researchers as they journey through uncharted and unfamiliar intellectual terrain. By sharing their stories, we hope to normalize the challenges and frustrations that come with independent research, and also share those moments where students transcend the normal grind of the school day to discover concepts that range from the global to deeply personal. We will begin with a brief introduction to the student of focus, why they pick their topic, and discuss their growth over the course of the last year. It should be mentioned that the opinions expressed in this podcast in no way reflect the opinions of our school district, Bergen County Technical Schools and Special Services, or our school itself, Bergen County Technical High School Teterboro, or the College Board. The work detailed in this podcast was most likely completed in AP Capstone, but this podcast is in no way affiliated with the College Board. For this episode, we are going to be talking about food and diet culture on TikTok, which marks probably the fourth or fifth project in this class over the last 3 years that has to do with social media and diet culture. And the person who's going to be talking to us about that is sitting across from me right now. So, Venna, I was instructed to hype Venna up, but I'm feeling fairly low energy right now. So I'm going to leave it to Venna to hype herself up. Introduce yourself to the people.
Hello, everybody. My name is Venna Lee. You know what? I'm not even going to lie. I'm a little tired, too, so I can't hype myself to the best ability. But if you know me, I'm always there for you. And, and you know what? I usually can deliver the most hype energy possible. But today, we're just going to get right into it. You know what? I think it's interesting that there's so many people doing diet culture, food, social media. And I'm just going to like talk a little bit about that because me and Ms. Hernandez, we talked about this in class in AP Lang. And the diet culture is just become so prevalent because food is everywhere we go. And it hasn't always been like that. Now, you could go to a bookstore and there's a little small corner store like a restaurant, like Barnes & Noble's. They literally have an engraved like cafe in there.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. Right, yeah. And then there's any like corner you turn, there's food. There's a food, there's cafe, there's some drinks, like a vending machine. Before, it wasn't that common. So I think naturally, we've become just so used to constantly having something to eat, having something to drink. And because of that, it's become such a greater part of our lives than before. And the phenomenon is just so much deeper and like in need of analysis.
Yeah, and the first project that had to do with food that someone in... They weren't in AP research, they were in AP seminar. They wanted to do something on mukbang commentary, and I had never watched a mukbang video before.
I always watch it.
And then when I became aware of it, I was like, what is going on?
It's so weird, right?
I guess it's touching some kind of ASMR button as well. Mm-hmm. But I just was very taken aback by the sheer amount of noodles that were being consumed and the loudness of the slurping.
Like, it's so weird, but as I said, because we're just so used to it, that's been our norm. So even that content is, like, normal to us, if anything's sought out for.
And what's interesting, too, is I recently saw last year, I don't know if you know Fluffy's fried chicken that's over in Hackensack.
Yep, I've eaten it. Beautiful.
It's fantastic stuff. And this is not an ad. We're not plugging anything for ad revenue. But I did come across a video that was a mukbang video of someone eating Fluffy's fried chicken.
Right.
And I just was like, okay, now it's transcended borders. Like, it's just like eating tons of food in a very auditory way, for lack of a better term.
Sometimes it's even for visual.
I guess that's true as well.
Yeah. All right. I mean, I'm not even going to like try and expose me and Chloe, but yesterday we were in the bus. We were both hungry, so we resorted to mukbang and we literally just watched it for 30 minutes. It's almost like you watch it to like like cure your own hunger or increase your cravings.
It honestly makes me more hungry.
No, yeah.
Actually,
but then like
sometimes,
when you eat the food, then it becomes so much better because you dreamt of it.
Yeah.
It's interesting, yeah.
So since that first exposure for me, I've seen students look at TikTok primarily, right, and how TikTok presents diet culture. So last year we had a student do something on fad diets. A lot of projects based around the idea of eating disorders and eating disorder representation on Tumblr. Like people have really, it seems like there's this sub theme of the projects that seems to be centered around this. Why did you end up picking it for your project?
Yeah, so for my project, yeah, what you're saying, a lot of eating disorders, that sort of underlying foundation. I find it that it's become so normalized now, but at the same time, like, you don't talk about it. So you know of it, but it's kind of hidden away from you. Like the idea of how common, like, body image issues, body distortion, lowered self-esteem. It's so common, but not talked about enough. And I see it within my friends, my family. And it's honestly, you can see it for yourself too. Even if you're trying to be as body positive as possible, you can naturally sometimes, like, be deteriorating in your own mind. So I wanted to look into this and how you're not to blame. The media that you're constantly consuming and can naturally just build your mind and build your perspective into that, like, mold of, like, oh, I'm not good enough. So naturally you'll become, like, prone to thinking that way. So I wanted to look into this, especially now that it's more prevalent with the food everywhere.
It's an interesting connection. You have the media you consume influencing what you physically consume.
Uh-huh, absolutely.
What was your project ultimately about?
So I'm not even going to lie, I started with exercise research. Mm-hmm. So how does exercise improve your mental health? How does it improve your physical health? So yeah, it's like that border between physical and mental. But I looked into eating instead because I realized they really go hand in hand. Because exercising, if you get into that, you want to become more healthy. And quote unquote, healthiness equals to eating less or eating in a different way. So I wanted to hit on that border of how you act physically comes with mental. Because now, like, in this age, that border is very hazy because your, like, things that you do on the screen is what you do in real life. The screen is your life at this point.
Depending on how you use it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We'll get into the TikTok ban mm-hmm. later because that's going to be key to the development here. But what would you say to the audience was your research question, and how did you go about trying to explore it?
Sure. So as I said, I began with exercising and then I developed into fad diets. And fad diets are basically pseudoscience where it's presented as if it's scientific, but it lacks rigorous methodology or empirical evidence. So that was more like how people think, oh, if you eat this way, you'll lose weight. Mm-hmm. But then I realized this isn't more of like a overall topic of focus for me, it's more of a detail. So I ended up looking more into how I would say just the content of weight loss overall looks into and what they present. And then not just the content, but how people right away respond to it. Because the gap that I was filling was, yes, there's so much content for spreading out like weight loss images and messages, but they immediately just assume that everyone agrees with it as soon as they watch it, and they're immediately influenced by it. But if you look into the comments, yes, majority of them do just follow what's given in the original message, but there is some resistance. So I wanted to look into how the comments respond to weight loss and what this can mean for how there may be like progress against those toxic weight loss diet cultures.
What was the method that you used to try to explore this phenomenon that you're talking about with weight loss? It was like hashtag WL.
Yes.
Yeah. Explain that a mm-hmm. little bit more so people get an idea of the recipe you follow to do your examination.
Okay, sure. So I did a content analysis, and I didn't do a content analysis on the content actually of like the videos, but I did it of the content within the comments. So I'm looking into how these individuals are responding to the initial message. And I did this through the hashtag weight loss. So I found my sample size of 25 videos, and within their 10 comments, the top 10 comments following a criteria of like how relevant those comments are, which I'll go all into like in the actual nitty gritty parts of my research paper. But from there, I actually had to take account AlgoSpeak. So AlgoSpeak is where individuals will find ways to go around like algorithmic censoring. So this might be a different spelling of a certain word or what is it? Like the initials?
Yeah, you can sort of mess with emojis,
right?
And
like numbers instead of letters.
Yeah, like I'm trying to think. A student last year was examining anti-Chinese sentiment. It was like hashtag CH1NA
instead of exactly. Like a famous one for my topic is like 3D. So instead of ED for eating disorder, you do 3.
Oh, because it's flipped.
Mm-hmm. And then also, let's see. I mean, the one that I used was WL. So instead of hashtag weight loss fully, because a lot of videos were censored under that original hashtag. I did use that one too. But I use hashtag WL to make up for that, because it's less known as a site where TikTok moderators can just take down content.
Why did you pick TikTok as the platform for your exploration? Why not use Instagram?
Mm-hmm.
Considering, you know, the whistleblower in 2022 basically saying this is doing harm to young women. Why choose TikTok?
I chose TikTok because it's very up and coming, and we'll talk about the ban in a second, but it was made almost a decade after these other social media platforms, yet it has over 1.8 billion users. So it's new, but it's so prevalent, and that's why it's so important to look into how it can be such a pivotal part of people's lives, even though it's new. And if anything, because it's new, I think it's like in more need of research, because there's like less amount of content analysis out there on this app. Also, it has the highest engagement rate out of all social media posts per post. So that's actually really interesting, because for maximal extraction of the best amount of comments on what these people are thinking, I thought this would be like the perfect platform. Also, like, this is a personal connection, but everyone I talk to has TikTok. I personally deleted it after the ban, but
we'll get into that.
Yes, I had it, and let me tell you, it's so addicting. It's so addicting. You don't even try, but once you get on it, you feel this like rush, because like it gives you the feeling and the illusion that you're in control, that your algorithm is set to everything you're interested in. So you're just addicted. You're constantly swiping because there's more to see. And that pattern, oh my gosh, like you can be consuming content that you never wanted to consume. And that's how like I think that this issue of social media and this diet culture, it's like even more prevalent than before because of TikTok.
That was a really well articulated
thank you
examination of how it keeps you how it keeps those dopamine levels high, and it keeps you on app. Now that you've done this project, do you view your consumption on social media differently? And I know we keep saying this, you are currently not on TikTok, but we'll get into the reason why. So let's just talk about social media in general, and then we'll get into the ban after that.
Mm-hmm. All right, so my perspective on social media. I think it's been a known fact that social media is bad for you. The phone is bad for you. I mean, my mom always says to get off the phone. But I've always just kind of like skimmed over this. And I've, like, my friends know, like, I'm off of social media for the majority of times. I only have like Snapchat to like text my friends. So I've always tried to keep myself accountable for it. But I've never like really gotten it. You know, like I've had it deleted because I knew at surface level it's bad for me. I'm wasting my time on here. One thing that I always use to keep myself accountable is after 30 swipes, I think, okay, let me try to restate. Let me try to like list out the 30 videos that I watched. Sometimes I couldn't even list out one on TikTok.
That's interesting. It's almost a check for how fractionalized your attention got in those 30 videos.
Like, sure, if I swipe back, then I'll be like, oh, yeah, I remember that.
Right.
But after it, you, like, swipe your memory. So that time you spent, like, watching that video is all wasted. Hmm. And that, I just felt so guilty for it, so I always had it deleted. But anyways, my perspective originally was, okay, it's bad for me, it's wasting my time, so I had it deleted. But now that I actually am analyzing it, I'm realizing those subconscious messages that you're constantly consuming, you may think you don't remember it, but you do. And I'm really, really thinking and emphasizing how bad that can be for you, especially when the content you see is based on toxic weight loss ideals. Because yes, you might see and be like, that's ridiculous. But at the end of the day, it's going to be in the back of your head. That message that you saw where it's deteriorating and antagonizing weight, it's going to stick with you, even if you don't directly remember it and like memorize it. that will eventually pile up. And I think that's why social media is so critical to analyze. And now, because it's just, it's everywhere, it's so much more important and like a part of our lives.
What did you find ultimately with, because you weren't analyzing the videos themselves.
No, yeah.
You were analyzing the commentary in response to mm-hmm. the video on TikTok.
Yeah.
So what did you find users were doing in response to these videos that were promoting toxic weight loss ideals?
Okay. So this is going to be a little personal anecdote, but when I was watching, there were two different types of videos. Some videos were in the video itself. It's like, these are some harsh motivations so you can stay on that weight loss goal. And they would have the craziest, most like ridiculous things in the videos, like text. It's like, oh, don't reward yourself like a dog. Why would you eat? And when I see this, I'm like, are you serious? Like, that's, there's no way people would follow that. And then in the comments, though, everyone's like, thank you so much. This helped me. Amazing. Like, wow, you're the best. I'm like, no way. But then you see this, it's like, okay, maybe this is me like not thinking this is okay. But in the comments, clearly it's just so accepted. And then the other half is, guys, I need help with weight loss. Give me some harsh weight loss goals in the comments. And then this is where people would give it themselves. And then in here, it's even crazier. Like, I don't know how it doesn't get taken down. And actually, this is one of those instances of AlgoSpeak. They would use different spellings to get away with that moderation. But those comments are even worse, where they think of like their own ways of how they preserve weight loss goals, mm-hmm. and they share it.
Hmm. Did any of this deviate from what you expected to see? Either because of previous literature on the phenomenon or just your preconceived notions. Did any of what you're describing deviate from what you thought you were going to see?
This is also half-half, because my initial hypothesis was, okay, people are going to agree. That's natural. I mean, in my literature review, I mentioned that this thin ideal has been prevalent for almost a century now. So it's just inevitable. But at the same time, I was having that like hope, little piece of hope in my heart.
Just a touch.
Yeah. That some people would resist, you know, especially now, because there's this like quote unquote woke idea where like, okay, now we have body positivity.
Right.
Like maybe we will go against these like clearly obvious, well, for me, maybe eating disorder habits, and maybe we'll be like, no, we can't be doing this. So I had those two different like hopes. Well, whoa, I did not hope for the first one.
Well,
but,
no, I got
but I actually saw both just in different like ratios. So the majority,
let's get into that,
yeah, the majority was following, and yes, it fits my hypothesis, but not to my liking.
So following what the video was promoting,
yes, mm-hmm. and following like typical traditional weight loss ideals.
Okay.
So in a way, it kind of leads into eating disorders.
Gotcha.
It can't be confirmed that it's an eating disorder, but it is just the preliminary habits. And then second, it was about 35% of my comments they resisted, and this is actually really interesting because the way they resist was very different. About 60% of the comments were resisting in empathetic ways. So they were like, okay, like, please don't do this. It's bad for you. And it's trying to help people out of these habits.
Okay.
But then those 40% were like, no, like, yeah, you're resisting, but you're stupid. Like you're stupid for following these. And they're saying like, you should resist, but you not resisting right now, like you're stupid. So honestly, if I was in a position where I'm not resisting and I'm also following like eating disorder like habits, and I saw a comment like that saying like, you're so stupid for doing this, blah, 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 and like, excuse my language, I wouldn't feel a need to break out of those bad habits. Mm. I would think, why should I? They're just hating on me.
There seems to be, over the course of this conversation, I feel like you're mentioning this idea of like shame and blame in both directions.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if that's something that popped up.
No, you're totally right. So besides those, I would say like 60% of the 30% rejecting, there's just shame everywhere. That's why I think this like analyzing the comments is just so important. And this shame is even more so like going to affect the people like using and interpreting this information, because I found that comments are more influential than the videos itself, because the commenters are more like a peer like atmosphere. It's more, how do you say this? It's like the people are more everyday like. Because the
more relatable.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, you said it perfectly. So the content that you receive, you might like in the back of your head realize, okay, these are content creators. You know what? Like they're not really on my same level. They're not like the day-to-day life that I meet, you know? But the people that you comment with, they're your average Joes. Like they're anyone. They're just like you. Because it's more of like a platform where anyone can comment, and it's also anonymous. So you think like, okay, this is more like my peers, and I won't get shame. And this is like what everyone else might think. And these are like the more natural opinions that come out of seeing that message. So yeah, like you get more influence in this. And so the shame there will feel even harder than the shame from the videos, because you're like, oh, these people are just like me. And then they're shamed, so I should feel ashamed.
Yeah, but I think it speaks back to what you said earlier. It's not only are you consuming the content, you're also consuming the interactions of the people that are happening below that content.
This.
And all of that is getting filtered by your brain in one way or another. To go back to January when TikTok was going to be banned.
Yeah.
And I know we had this conversation. You erased TikTok from your phone in anticipation of the ban.
Yes.
And then you literally couldn't put it back.
No.
Because of whatever happened over the course of those 2 weeks where you couldn't put it back. But now you have the ability to put it back.
Yes.
And you elected not to put it back.
Yeah.
Has anything changed because of that?
Okay. Well, you know what? Let's go right back as soon as I deleted.
Okay.
I talked to you about this before. I had crazy like withdrawals. That sounds so dramatic. Like, oh my gosh, it's not an addiction. It is an addiction. After that, I was like, I need to scroll on something. It was so weird. I was like, this is ridiculous. Like my freedom of mind was almost in the hands of an app. And I was like, that's just crazy to me. And that was a wake up call. Like, I need to get out of it. But then if I were to get the app back, once again, like I would do that test. Could I even remember 30 videos? No, couldn't even remember 2. So it was just a sort of like stage that I had to go get past on like not being addicted to TikTok. But yes, I haven't downloaded it and like had it on my phone since. I actually have like periods where like, oh, I'll download it for a day to like catch up on like my friend's posts, whatever. But then I'll delete it again. My norm is just not having it on. And I think it's just because I like always look back on January. Like I was an addict in a way. And it just like disturbs me. And now I just can't go back. And I'm sure maybe mine is just more dramatic than others, because other people I know, like some friends, they can actually like limit themselves. But for me, I just found that difficult, and having it out of my sight completely helped. And with that in mind, like that idea of like you always getting content and you being addicted to that like constant source of like new messages. Once you see those new comments as well, like you're just naturally adapting and like taking in this information. People are going to take in that information from the weight loss diet culture content as well.
Yeah, that's, it's funny. So you will download it for a day, but just to kind of, but see, and this is where even as a parent, I get this criticism from other parents. If my kid, my son doesn't have a phone, but other parents are like, well, how are kids going to communicate with him if he doesn't have a phone? I'm like, I don't know. You can call my phone and I'll hand him the phone. Like almost like it's a landline.
Yeah. Okay.
But the idea that by removing yourself from some kind of app or communication method that everyone else has access to, you will become isolated.
No, yeah, that's actually, this is really interesting, because my friend, she's a best friend from district, and she always gets mad at me that I deleted TikTok. She's like, Vanna, no, like I have to send you funny videos. You have to see my posts, like blah, blah. And honestly, she's one of the sole reasons why I still have Snapchat too, because she only really texts people on Snapchat. So I feel that kind of like I'm disconnected. In a way.
Like, in a way, right?
Yeah.
Because if she was at school with you right now, you wouldn't need the app to sort of see.
Honestly, not even that, though.
Oh,
because
really?
I have so many friends at this school, too, and I don't get a lot of their jokes. And it's kind of funny, but, like, you know, like, what's that called? Brain rot humor?
Are we talking Italian brain rot humor? Or are we getting into the...
Oh, your son told you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have an... Those kids don't have phones, but,
How do they know?
I don't know. It's like tra-la-la-la.
Yes. You know, yeah. Ballerina cappuccino.
Okay. Yeah, there you go. I have a sister-in-law who's... she's only 23.
Oh, wow.
She's 18 years younger than my wife, mm-hmm. so... She keeps me updated on a lot of the, the brain rot, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so that, like, for example, Chloe says I'm like a millennial because I don't know any of her jokes, and it's like, oh, like, yeah, like, I kind of feel FOMO, you know? It's like, oh, I don't know these jokes, and they're like, yeah. You're such a millennial, blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, you know what? That's a sacrifice I'm willing to make because, yes, I won't have those jokes, but I feel so much better. Like, that just detox from TikTok. I don't know. But I'm not going to lie. Yeah, because social media is such a like prime part of our life now. It's, yes, you are going to miss out. And I am going to miss out on that brain rot humor. Ugh. But I don't know. I think it's worth it.
You got to get that JOMO. You got to get that joy of missing out.
You're right. Wait, you're right. I do.
Well, I think we all need a little bit of that. We can't mm-hmm. we can't take in everything, so it's being more intentional about what you do take in.
Yeah.
Even the idea, just to go back to what you mentioned before, that idea of intention, if you intend to catch up on your friend's post and you download TikTok for a day, catch up, then you erase it, and then you go talk to your friend, oh, like I saw that. There's some kind of mind... fullness that is absent from the mindlessness of the 30 video scrolling that you were talking about before.
Right.
But I think that requires a certain level of self-control on the user.
Okay.
You know,
But I can't even act like I'm also like good at self-control there because yes, when I download it for a day, no, sometimes like I'm so hooked and yes, my original intention was, okay, I'm just going to catch up on my friends. But yeah, because it's just naturally so addicting, I'll have it on my phone for another day or two. And it like those 2 days fly by. Like I didn't even realize I had it on my phone, but I'm like always on it during those 2 days. And then I'm like, whoa, I like have to take a step back. I'm like, no. Like this is happening again. I'm deleting it.
Yeah. And I again, don't shame yourself for this. It should be like a non-judgmental thing. It just... these are apps that are designed to keep you on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're designed... It's weird because as teenagers, your desire for sociability is higher than
very
someone...
Very high.
Who, yeah, mm-hmm. very high. It's scratching that itch because that's what it's made for. And then it just becomes interesting to me to see what the adults in the room, like, you know, just globally, like, you know, this is like the tech industry is not run by a bunch of teenagers or...
Yeah.
You know, it's like the adults know that this is how, this is what it does, but ultimately it makes the app successful.
Yeah, so they profit off of it.
And they profit off of it, which is unfortunate. So it's like that intention, or just being aware of how manipulative it could be a way of checking yourself.
Right. But you know what? It's actually kind of funny. It's ironic that when you scroll for way too long, you eventually see a post that says, hey, you should get off this app.
Yeah.
Hey, you should take a mindfulness break. I just scroll past it. And I think a lot of my friends do too.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. Like, yeah, like the people who are making these apps, they're adults. They're a lot older than us. They're not like the prime audience. But they realize they sort of have that responsibility of... okay, I need to get these kids off. But I feel like those posts are almost performative because you're getting money from having us on your app.
Yeah.
But you do have that responsibility to try, like, quote unquote, try.
There are lots of air quotes
so,
happening
yeah,
right now.
Sure. Like, like that post, it's one post, but you, it's almost like they know we're just going to swipe past. Or maybe that's just me. But
again, we have no definitive answers here, but we're just speculating.
Right.
As someone who is a avid bullet journaler.
Oh, journaler, yes.
Is that a word? As a, someone
journaler.
Who uses, journaler? as someone who uses a bullet journal, you've just completed 2 years of the AP Capstone program. Any ways that journaling helped you make sense of your experience in these highly unusual courses?
Oh, yeah. Speaking of highly unusual courses, I always talk about like this to my dad and my mom, but it's these two classes have been the most rewarding classes simply because it's just so individual. And that's why it's unusual. Because in school, you've always been told what to do. You have rules to follow. You have deadlines to hit.
Yeah.
So these classes... are so different in that way. And you have to grow your own mental and your discipline to work with that, that newfound individuality. And bullet journaling, I've always loved to journal, like, for my personal life. So, oh, what am I doing today? I mean, if you heard my symposium last year, I was just talking about how this helped me deal with monotony in daily life. So it's more like, oh,
I get that.
Yeah, like, yeah. What hobbies can I do? And the journal kind of keeps me accountable for that. In a different way, the journal held me accountable in terms of what I was doing in terms of deadlines that I set for myself. So it's more of a to-do list. It's more of a planner. I would be like, not even just, I need to finish this literature review by today, but it's more, I have to make myself sit down today. It's like different in terms of how much do I want to complete. It's like, can I get myself in the right headspace for me to complete?
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. So the bullet journaling, the thing that I love so much about it is it's so free. Nobody has to see it. Nobody. So you could do whatever you want in it. And there's just no rules. Same thing with like almost like an AP research. There's little to no rules that are set for you. You kind of have to do it yourself. So for the bullet journal, it might not work for you, but it worked for me. And what I did was, okay, what am I feeling right now? I'm feeling productive. Perfect. That's your cue. You have to look at my to-do list. I have my literature review. I have to find sources, blah, blah, blah. That's when I would tick off those like concrete tasks.
Gotcha.
But then let's say, what am I feeling right now? You know what? I'm not feeling it. I'm just feeling so dismotivated. I'm not going to do it. But then you still have to use that journal to keep you accountable. It's like, yeah, I don't feel motivated, but that means I should resort to something else. And in my journal, I kind of had a list like, okay, when you feel lazy, which you know will eventually happen.
It's gotta. That's
human nature.
Yeah. We can't be go all the time.
We have to do like easy tasks. You have to trick yourself. Like it feels like nothing, but it actually does like add up to a lot when you do it. So I had this list of easy tasks that might just be scrolling through old literatures or honestly just like doing skim review of what I've already written.
It's a good strategy.
Even just texting friends like, what have you guys done so far? Like, oh, can I read it a little bit?
Yeah.
It feels like nothing. It really does feel like nothing. It's work that you do when you're lazy because it doesn't take like active effort. It does, but you make yourself feel like, oh, I'm not really doing much.
But it could catalyze an idea because your brain might not be trying to force something.
Exactly. So in those moments where you feel like you're being lazy, you still have to force yourself to do a little bit of work. But that work won't feel like a lot. But eventually, when you take that little amount of time, you would have done nothing if you didn't keep yourself accountable to some extent, that'll add up. And that'll help you. And I think that really helps me understand my topic a lot more in those little moments of quote unquote, like useless little tasks.
Yeah, it's compounding interest on a minimal investment for the business students in the room right now.
Oh gosh.
They're
avoiding
some,
eye contact. Oh, never mind. Yeah, there you go.
I think that's an interesting take. And I think journaling and just self-reflective writing is kind of the most human writing you can do. You can't have an AI write about how you're feeling.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
You know, but it helps you make sense of your time. And again, going back to something you said before, that idea that the days fly by when you're just locked into some kind of engaging screen.
Right.
And to pause, to write, to make sense of just your experiences might be one of the more important tools we have as we enter whatever's happening in the next 20 years in education and business with the integration of AI. We have no idea. So at the very least, we can keep track of how we're feeling about it.
Yeah, I think a good chunk of that is really like self-discipline and also intention. So yeah, sure, like AI use, we shouldn't antagonize it fully, of course.
Yeah.
But it's more like the intention of how you're using it. So same thing, like you still have to depend on yourself. And I think that's where bullet journaling comes in. You have to keep track of your own state of mind. And this brings me into like because we have such a short amount of time,
yeah.
I'll just say it briefly. But Viktor Frankl, he's a man who survived, I think, 4 concentration camps, and the rest of his family did not survive it. But his famous quote was something along the lines of, "No one can eventually take your state of mind. They could take everything else, but they cannot take your freedom of mind." And I think that's where AI stops. AI will never be able to replicate what we could do for ourselves. And I think that's why bullet journaling kind of allows you to really step into your own state of mind. And as I said, bullet journaling has no rules. So you can do whatever it takes to help you set yourself accountable and let the research process be a lot better for you. And I think that's just, that was what really helped me be a better researcher, cool. Better AP capstoner this year.
All right. Any last words before we go? Because we've hit our time.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I really did think that AP Capstone, AP Research especially, was so rewarding this year. I think I did hit a lot of topics. I hope it wasn't too confusing today on comments and algorithm.
Yeah.
But I think you do, for the future researchers, you need to hit on what your main thing that you're searching for is. What is that one specific gap? Because you can cure the ill, but you cannot raise the dead. So you don't want to do too much that you can't do in that specific time frame.
Realistic about your goals. Yeah.
I had so many interests. I wanted to look into the videos itself too, but I had to keep myself limited to the comments. And if anything, I think that'll give you even richer results because you are more detailed in the way that you are focusing and honing in on your scope. So that's just one tip to the future researchers. But overall, yeah, I really, really did love this class. And I think I'll be taking it for my next 4 years in college.
Oh, research? You're going to be researching?
Oh, I hope so.
All right. Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But yeah. Thank you so much, Mr. Levo.
Yeah. Thank you, Vanna. All right. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
You too.